Discourse on The End of the Revolution and the Beginning of Independence by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 8, Provincial Congress, October 5th to February 24th. Salem, Massachusetts, October 5th, 1774. 90 men who had been elected by their towns to meet in the Salem Courthouse as the General Court. They were waiting for General Gage to appear, though most knew already that he would not show up. He had already dissolved this court. The 90, however, wished to demonstrate their willingness to work with the Crown, though as far as they were concerned, they were there under the Charter. Most had felt that this act was necessary to demonstrate their willingness to act under the Charter, as well as to justify resorting to an alternate, illegal government. Understanding that civil government was both desirable and necessary for the function of their communities. The next day, all of the delegates resolved themselves into a provincial congress. No governor had sworn them in. No official body had sanctioned their authority. Their authority had, for the first time, been sanctioned solely by the people who had sent them there. Their first business was to elect officers. John Hancock and Benjamin Lincoln were elected president and clerk, respectively. They then adjourned to the second Tuesday in October, the date previously designated for that purpose. Concord, Massachusetts, October 11th to 29th, 1774. At 10 o'clock, Tuesday morning, October 11th, the 90 delegates from the General Court, along with 200 other delegates selected by the various towns and counties, met at the Concord Courthouse and reconvened the Provincial Congress. Of the 260 towns then in Massachusetts, 209 had sent delegates. This was a far greater participation than the General Court, even under the Charter, had ever inspired in Massachusetts. The following week, the Congress moved to Cambridge, where the infrastructure was more able to accommodate this extremely large gathering. The first order of business included procuring arms, raising money to pay for them, establishing civil government, and establishing a military structure to support their resistance to the imposition of Parliament on their rights under the Charter. On October 20th, a committee to consider what is necessary to be done for the defense and safety of the province was appointed and met behind closed doors to preserve military secrecy. On October 24th, another committee was appointed to determine the most proper time for this province to provide a stock of powder, ordnance, and ordnance stores for the province. Later that day, their report was returned to the Congress. Now was the proper time. On October 26th, the Military Committee came back with their report. The Congress then approved the following: 16 field pieces, 3-pounders with carriages, irons, etc., wheels for ditto, irons, sponges, ladles, and etc. 4 ditto 6-pounders with ditto, carriages, irons, and etc. for 12 battering cannon. 4 mortars and appurtenances, viz. 2 8-inch and 2 13-inch. 20 tons of grape and round shot, from 3 to 24 pounds. 10 tons of bombshells, 5 tons of lead balls, 1,000 barrels of powder, 5,000 arms and bayonets, and 75,000 flints. These were not for hunting. The Congress had already suggested to the towns that any money due the government should be held. On October 28th, they appointed Henry Gardner as Receiver General and directed the towns to remit any collected money to him. It also encouraged all of the inhabitants to pay any taxes due and all future taxes to be paid to Gardner. The Provincial Congress established a committee of safety with the power to alarm, muster, and cause to be assembled the militia when necessary. This committee was also empowered to appoint new militia commanders, while the men of each militia company were encouraged to elect new officers if they had not already done so. Finally, they directed all of the militia to hold themselves in readiness on short notice from the said committee of safety to march to the place of rendezvous. The Congress adjourned on October 29th. The committee of safety was instructed to sit in Cambridge, where it could keep an eye on the movements of the British troops. Boston, Massachusetts, November 14, 1774. On October 3rd, General Gage wrote, "I don't find that the spirit abates anywhere, for it is kept up with great industry. I don't suppose people were ever more possessed with zeal and enthusiasm." General Gage had been trying to have quarters built for his troops and found that this refusal of all assistance has thrown us into difficulties, but I hope to get through them and to be able to put the troops under cover, though not so comfortably as I could wish. Neither Boston carpenters nor those in New York would hire out to the British. Boston, out of self-preservation, those from New York, out of fear, if they should oppose the desires of the patriots who had taken over nearly the entire province. On October 17th, General Gage was concerned over some rumors that had reached Boston. "There are various reports spread abroad of the motions made at the Provincial Congress. Whilst at Concord, some, it's said, moved to attack the troops in Boston immediately, others to value the estates in the town in order to pay the proprietors the loss they might sustain and to set the town on fire." By October 30th, General Gage was extremely alarmed. In his State of the Province report, he said, "Nobody here or at home could have conceived that the acts made for the Massachusetts Bay could have created such a ferment throughout the continent and united the whole in one common cause, or that the country people could have been raised to such a pitch of frenzy. If force is to be used at length, it must be a considerable one, and foreign troops must be hired, for to begin with small numbers will encourage resistance and not terrify, and will in the end cost more blood and treasure. An army of such a service should be large enough to make considerable detachments to disarm and take the counties. Many of the leaders, I apprehend, mean to bully and terrify, and others to push matters to extremity, puffed up by hopes of assistance from the whole continent, and certainly of the immediate aid of the four New England provinces, which they flatter themselves are alone sufficient to withstand all the forces of Great Britain. The people are told that the present acts only lead to others which are to divide their lands into lordships and tax them at so much per acre. I am concerned that the affairs are gone to so great a length that Great Britain cannot yield without giving up all her authority over this country unless some submission is shown on the part of the colonies, which I have tried at here, though hitherto without effect. And affairs are at such a pitch through a general union of the whole that I am obliged to use more caution than could otherwise be necessary, lest all the continent should unite in hostile proceedings against us." On November 2nd, he wrote, "I shall not be surprised, as the Provincial Congress seems to proceed higher and higher in their determination, if persons should be authorized by them to grant commissions and assume every power of legal government, for their edicts are implicitly obeyed throughout the country." On November 14th, General Gage was so frustrated at the inability to raise revenues the counties and towns had deferred payment and transferred the money to the provincial Congress, that he published this broadside and had it published in the Boston newspapers. Province of Massachusetts Bay, by the Governor, a proclamation. Whereas a number of persons unlawfully assembled at Cambridge in the month of October last, calling themselves a provincial Congress, did, in the most open and daring terms, assume to themselves the powers and authority of government independent of and repugnant to His Majesty's government legally and constitutionally established within this province, intending to utterly to subvert the same, and did, amongst other unlawful proceedings, take upon themselves to resolve and direct a new and unconstitutional regulation of the militia in high derogation of His Majesty's royal prerogative, and also to elect and appoint Henry Garden, Esquire, of Stowe, to be receiver general in the room of Harrison Gray, Esquire, then and still legally holding and executing that office, and also to order and direct the monies granted to His Majesty to be paid into the hands of said Henry Gardner and not to said Harrison Gray, Esquire, and further earnestly to recommend to the inhabitants of the province to oblige and compel the several constables and collectors to comply with and execute the said directions of the law, all which proceedings have a most dangerous tendency to ensnare His Majesty's subjects, the inhabitants of this province, and draw them into perjuries, riots, sedition, treason, and rebellion. For the prevention of which evils and the calamitous consequences thereof, I have thought it my duty to issue this proclamation, hereby earnestly exhorting and in His Majesty's name strictly prohibiting all His liege subjects within this province from complying in any degree with the said requisition, recommendations, directions, or resolves of the aforesaid unlawful assembly, as they regard His Majesty's highest displeasure and would avoid the pains and penalties of law. And I do hereby charge and command all justices of the peace, sheriffs, constables, collectors, and other officers in their several departments to be vigilant and faithful in the execution and discharge of their duty in their respective offices, agreeable to the well-known established laws of the land and to the utmost of their power, and by all lawful ways and means to discountenance, discourage, and prevent a compliance with such dangerous resolves of the above-mentioned or any other unlawful assembly whatever. Given at Boston this 10th day of November in the 15th year of the reign of His Majesty George III, by the grace of God of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King Defender of the Faith, etc., Anno Domini 1774, signed Thomas Gage by His Excellency's command, Thomas Flicker, Secretary, God Save the King. Brookline, Massachusetts, December 13, 1774. General Gage, becoming desperate to find a solution, made his next move on December 13. John Andrews described the activity. This morning, a Welch Fusilier, together with a detachment from another regiment, formed a body of 400 men, and equipped with knapsacks, etc., marched out of town as far as the Punch Bowl in Brooklyn. When they returned again, what this maneuver can be for, I cannot imagine, other than to give the men an airing, or with a view to make frequent feints of the kind in order to familiarize the people to it, whereby in the future they may make an interruption into the country without creating any suspicion of their design, or possibly to make the soldiers acquainted with the different roads near town. On December 21st, Andrews again reports, two or three regiments to continued to go out of town every day, sometimes to Cambridge and other times to Dedham. Though General Gage's intentions are unknown, if his desire was to pose a threat to the colonists, it had the reverse effect. Resentment was building because of these unwarranted trespasses into the countryside. Fort William and Mary, New Hampshire, December 14th and 15th, 1774. On December 13th, the Boston Committee of Safety directed Paul Revere to ride to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, to advise the local patriots that the British were sending ships to Fort William and Mary to take arms, ammunition, and powder that was stored there. At that time, there were only 6 soldiers in the fort. On December 14th, 400 patriots overwhelmed the guard and made off with 100 barrels of gunpowder. The next day, an even larger crowd seized all the muskets and 16 cannon. By the time the British ships arrived, all the guns and powder had been taken and secreted in the countryside. Boston, Massachusetts, February 24th, 1775. On February 24th, General Gage received an intelligence report. That report provides insight into what Gage had to contend with regard to the activity in opposition to the royal government. The report read, "Committee of Safety appointed by Congress consisting of Hancock, Warren, Church, Heath, and Geary. These are to observe the motions of the army, and if they attempt to penetrate into the country, immediately to communicate the intelligence to Colonel Ward, Colonel Bigelow, and Colonel Henshaw, who live in or near the towns of Worcester and Leicester. Colonel Warren of Plymouth and Colonel Lee of Marblehead, they are to send express round the country to collect the minutemen who are to oppose the troops. These minutemen amount to about 15,000 and are picked men of the whole body of militia and all properly armed. There are in the county 38 field pieces and 19 companies of artillery, most of which are at Worcester, a few at Concord, and a few at Waterton. Their whole magazine of powder, consisting of between 90 and 100 barrels, is at Concord. There are 8 field pieces in the old store or barn near the landing place to Salem. They are to be removed in a few days. The seizure then would be greatly disconcert their schemes. Colonel Lee, Colonel Bryan, Mr. Devons, Mr. Shever, Mr. Watson, and Moses Gill are appointed a committee of supply who are to purchase all military stores to be deposited at Concord and Worcester." This intelligence made General Gage realize he had better begin acting before the situation got completely out of hand. He had to begin asserting himself. This ends episode 8.